This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3084 for Thursday, the 28th of May 2020. Today's show is entitled Audiobook Club 18 Star Trek: The Continuing Mission. It is hosted by Thaj Sarah and is about 100 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is: the HPR Audiobook Club reviews the fan audio drama Star Trek: The Continuing Mission.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
We are talking this evening on the Hacker Public Radio Book Club. We're doing something a little different. It's Star Trek, The Continuing Mission, and you can find it at www.StarTrekContinuingMission.com. And I suggested this at the last meeting. This is fan fiction, and both Paramount with Star Trek and Lucas with Star Wars, you know, they're pretty lenient with their properties at fan fiction, as long as nobody's making a profit off of. And of course, there are several. It's like Continuing Mission. I think they're using the same name. I mean, there are several video Star Trek homages out there that you can watch, and pretty much all of them are on YouTube. But when people don't have the resources to do the video, because there's some that have, some of these series have started out on video and then gone to audio because people didn't have the commitment to dress up and all the stuff. And so this is an audio only series. And there's probably several of these out here. But so far, they're up to 8 episodes with a 9th planned. Should be coming out fairly soon. But it's the Starship Montana from pretty much the original Star Trek era. I'm thinking that it's maybe slightly after the Kirk period. Maybe not. If you look at as far as the class of the starship, we have to go off the artwork because they never really say it's Excelsior class or whatever. And I was thinking that, but looking at some of the pictures for the later episodes, it may actually be an earlier class because it seems to have a twin boom behind the saucer section, like the Enterprise from, the Enterprise series. And then branching off into warp nacelles that actually that look more like the warp nacelles from the revised Enterprise. So the way they talk, it seems to be perhaps slightly beyond the original Star Trek, maybe from the time of the Star Trek movies, but slightly before Next Generation, because several places they talk about the Galaxy class starship as the new thing that's going on. It's in the prototype stage. There aren't, the Galaxy class is not online yet. Well, I should say, the first episode, Ghost Ship, they get in the battle with the Romulans who are trying to make the Federation think that they're being attacked by the Klingons, and in the ensuing battle, which what turns out to be a Romulan starship, the explosion of the, no, I guess it wouldn't be explosion, because that you do, we do have the Romulan ship coming back later as crash landed. But something that the Romulans did opened the time portal, and they wind up being intercepted by a ship from pretty close to next generation time point. And of course, they're not allowed to go back.
Well, what happened to you, 50? Something just electronic and weird just happened.
I bet his phone went off while he was on it.
Okay, so as 50 was saying, yeah, they get zapped forward in time, 70 or 72 years or something like that. And they have some directive similar to the prime directive that won't let them go back in time, because that will cause a paradox and affect the timeline of these people in the future. So that's no good.
That would be the temporal prime directive.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds like something they said. So they're not allowed to do that. So they're just kind of stuck in the future here. And that does come up once at least where, you know, they question that, but while they're stuck in the future, they have some adventures, and they're pretty cool adventures. What do you guys think?
Should we go through and introduce everybody? Because I don't think we did that when we started.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Hi, I'm X1101.
What's up? It's Taj.
Hi, my name's Pokey, and I'm addicted to audiobooks.
Word.
Yep.
And 5150 has been lost in the ether, but... We'll hopefully he'll come back.
Yeah, he usually comes back when that happens, and hopefully this will be no exception.
So I'll go first. When I was listening to these, I just like was really like instantly, especially like the first few episodes, really struck like how much I miss Star Trek. Like there is no Star Trek on TV. Like I was just like, oh my God, this is exactly what I miss. Like this is, it's the tone, especially early on, is dead on like next gen DS9 era, like Star Trek. It's right there and it's perfect for that. Unfortunately, I came to the realization because it just made me want like Star Trek back. Like I'm like, yeah, let's have a new show. But then I realized like if they bring back a new show, it will never be my Star Trek. Like my Star Trek is that Star Trek, and it's there and nobody can touch it. But this really like made me kind of like realize how much I missed it just being there every week.
See, I have Netflix and I'm currently rewatching DS9, so I don't miss it because I'm currently watching it. But other than that, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, yeah,
but rewatching,
it's not the same as having like new Trek. You know, like I've seen, once again, we were talking in the chat, I am this nerdy, I've seen every episode of Star Trek. So like, you don't get surprised anymore. And I mean, even some of the stuff that happens in this show is kind of like, okay, that was, part of this was from this episode and part of this was from this other episode that actually was a Star Trek episode. But like, it's just nice to see like something new in that universe.
But I do concur that I want new Trek on TV, but I want it to be done with the, you know, TNG, DS9, Voyager, something that caliber again, but now.
Yeah, and this is very good, I have to say. I was never, I was always a Star Trek fan. I've always liked Star Trek. I've always liked all of them. I was just, I've never into it, certainly not to Taj's level. I never, you know, really like obsessed about it or anything like that. But I always did like it, especially like, especially all of them, really. There wasn't a Star Trek I didn't like. And this was cool. This was really good. First episode, early on, I made a mistake when I downloaded these in not numbering the episodes. And I listened to them in alphabetical order, or at least I started to. And then when that didn't make as much sense, I went back and numbered them and fixed them. But I'd say like the first episode, the acting was like kind of way overacted, but that went away quick. They settled in and they found their rhythm really quick. And this was really, really well done. The acting is superb, especially Captain Edwards. I mean, he is an outstanding actor and his voice quality is tremendous. He is nearly at a hookah level of you know, listen to the phone book readability. Or read the phone book listenability rather. He's outstanding, and everybody else seemed to come along pretty well too. And this was really well acted, pretty well written, and well done overall.
It's really funny you say Ahuga, because like, I kind of had a dude that looks kind of like Ahuga in my mind when I was like imagining what he looked like.
I am back. Sorry guys, since I'm doing this on my phone, an actual phone call. I hope none of that bled, or it didn't sound like it in the background.
No, we did not hear your phone call.
Okay, but I kind of find myself wishing some of these characters were more fleshed out. I mean, we've got the Irish engineer, Commander McGuire. You know, it's pretty well fleshed out, you know, as the guy that the Captain Edwards bounces everything off of. We very interesting character in the Doctor, who we still don't know whether he's actually sinister or not. I think that may be a ruse by the author. I think we'll find out. He's definitely a weird fellow, but I think we'll find out if, should I say, second season. I don't know if they're going to break this up into seasons. What they've done so far seems like first season, and I think a lot of the questions about the Doctor will probably at some time be resolved, whether he's a sinister force.
I had some problems with the ship combat stuff coming through well in audio drama, stuff that, you know, you're used to seeing and it being chaotic on the screen. I really didn't feel like it translated well to good audio drama. But other than that, I thought it was really well done.
Well, there is a lot of stuff with this audio drama. I mean, they're not saying Lieutenant so-and-so do this. You're left to assume by the voice. And unfortunately, yes, doing it as an audio drama gets a little confused who's saying and doing what. But I think they've done as good a job as could be done, because you're not going to say the speaker's name every time you talk to him.
I think the one thing they really got right that made it, for me, very understandable and clear was the fact that they got the language of the structure of the show. So, like, all the little transitional music was in the right spots, and, like, even where, like, in the show, when it's a visual show, like, sort of, like, the beginning shot of any scene is, like, the ship outside, and it has, like, a little, you know, either the sound of the engines or maybe, like, a little music, and they even put that there in the audio drama, even though that wasn't something there. So, like, you're imagining it there anyways. So I think that, like, just making sure that it matched the structure of an episode really helped get over those barriers.
It's interesting you say that, because I thought one of the things that they got really right as well were the mixture of sound effects, where some of them sounded like the original series and some sounded like Next Generation, and they blended them really well. And I don't know if anybody, okay, who am I kidding? Everybody would notice, whether they came from original or Next Gen. But I thought they did a good job as far as the doors all sounded like original Star Trek. And I think the photon torpedoes did too. But then, like, there were other stuff that sounded like Next Gen. But I thought that was cool.
And I think that's part of what gives it very strongly a feel of right between those two time periods.
And, you know, I think... the music has evolved, because, you know, originally they were using the Next Generation theme and a slightly paraphrased version, Only Go Where No Ship Has Gone Before, etc. And especially, I think, in the last episode, episode 8, it looked like they'd come up with a brand new score for the intro music, plus, you know, diverged quite a bit from the, you know, from the standard Star Trek. And on some of that, I think it may be because, you know, Paramount, well, if you're not making a profit off, we're not coming after you copyright. I'm wondering if the people who actually wrote the music were liberal, and they might have got a letter someplace in there and said, hey, you knock it off.
Well, if they did that music as work for hire, they wouldn't, and Paramount owned the rights to the music, they wouldn't have any say in the matter.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what goes on behind. I think these guys would be definitely worth an interview, another podcaster. I've always been fascinated by the fan fiction realm, and I've never made progress on that, but I should sometime try to contact these people like this and say, well, what kind of tools, how do you make magic happen?
One thing really stood out about this production in particular, and it's a rant that we keep having on the show, and I just have to, you know, get our drink in. The fact that I'm gonna call this the anti J.J. Abrams conundrum. The fact that I can't come up with a new story because there's so much canon that I have to spin it off into a new universe, or I can't do a Star Wars movie set after the original movies because there's too many novels and there's not enough space to put in another movie where I can't use my own ideas. What this does is it finds a place where there's nothing else that exists and tells a story that doesn't impact anything else. And it's perfect. Like, you don't have to change everything around it. It's okay where it is. Like, there are ways to be creative. You just can't be lazy about it.
What you're saying, that this universe could coexist with the new J.J. Abrams universe.
I think he's saying exactly the opposite, that it does perfectly coexist with the non-J.J. Abrams universe, where this group of people went into the existing Trek universe, not the J.J. Abrams version of it, and did exactly what J.J. Abrams didn't do, found a place in that universe where they could play without touching any of the other timelines and still be able to do their own thing without messing anybody else up.
And, you know, I've said this before, I am scared by J.J. Abrams, you know, getting control of the Star Wars universe, because, you know, they've said anything outside the six movies is no longer canon. We can't be bothered to read any of the novelizations, etc. There's this whole thing about, you know, the children of Han and Leia and, you know, and Luke and all that stuff. Well, not so much children of Luke, you know, they're just going to stomp on whatever's been in novelizations. And, you know, I've always thrown up Star Wars as this great example of what you can do if you do take in everything as canon. When I was in junior high, after the first two movies, there was a series of, like, kids' books, you know, about Han Solo before, you know, A New Hope. And, and he goes on some planet and they need to defend it against the Empire. And he jumps in a Z-95 headhunter as an older fighter that they have around. And lo and behold, 15 years later, they come out with the X-Wing game, and the Z-95 Headhunter is a play. Well, I think it was an opponent in that one. I don't know if it was a playable. Eventually, it became playable, and it's like, wow, somebody went back and read this little novel written for eighth graders or whatever, and pulled that out of it. Unless that was something that was in the Lucas canon all along that never came to the screens. And all in one stroke, Abrams says, no, none of that stuff exists. I'm going to do my own thing because I can't be bothered.
And there are so many rich, well-done stories that have just been thrown out. I have an entire bookshelf behind me of stories that apparently don't matter anymore. But they do matter. They matter to people who wrote them, and they matter to people like me who read them.
The running joke with me and my friends is if we go to the movie, we're not really going to do this because we're shills and we'll sit and watch the movie no matter what and probably love it.
Yeah, me too.
Is the fact that as soon as they bring on Han and Leia's kid or kids, and if their name is not Jason, Jaina, or Anakin, we're going to walk out of the movie because it's just like, no. And I know they're not going to be that, but it just pisses me off because it's like, why couldn't you? I mean, you could even just, like, as fan service, just use the name, you know, but even you couldn't be bothered with that. You had to change it.
I would walk out of that movie for you.
You're a better man than me, because I don't even think I'll walk out of the movie for me.
No, I'm probably not even going to walk into that movie.
Well, I have to admit, you know, I did like the second Abrams Star Trek movie, nowhere near canon. I did enjoy it, but it was like, I'll put those over in another little cubby hole because thank you for destroying my childhood, J.J.
You know, I don't know that he... I saw the first one, and I don't know that he destroyed anything or did a bad job of it. And some of the later Star Trek movies weren't that great anyway. So, you know, like specifically the one where they were riding the wave for whatever the hell it was from the supernova. I thought that movie was crap, or miniseries or whatever it was. I don't remember now, but I didn't think that thing was any good at all. So for him to kind of pick up and wipe out some of that stuff, I didn't really mind.
Well, and I'm on the opposite side of a lot of people. Of all the Next Generation movies, I rather enjoyed Nemesis. I'm not a big fan of Insurrection.
I can't even keep it straight anymore. But I've seen them, all the Next Gen movies, and I think they're all serviceable.
I just, my whole problem, like, and I agree with Pokey, like, the first Abrams, like, Star Trek movie wasn't bad. It wasn't what I wanted. But it wasn't bad. Like, I can sit and watch it and understand why I did. The second one makes me want to punch things. Like, especially the last half where it's like, oh, our movie is so shitty, we have to remake the last, like, 20 minutes of Wrath of Khan. Because our movie's just not good enough to have its own ideas.
Now, when you say punch things, do you mean things or do you mean you want to punch J.J. Abrams?
For a long time. And I'll be honest, I didn't blame J.J. Abrams for the problem. I blame the writers because those writers are atrocious. They've made their whole career on taking properties and ruining them. Like, that's what their career is. And I was totally cool with J.J. Abrams, and especially when he was going to Star Wars. I was like, you know what? That's cool, because he's always said, you know, I like Star Trek, but I'm a Star Wars fan. And I was like, okay, cool. He gets to go do what he wants. That's cool. And I'm sure he'll make a badass Star Wars movie. But then as soon as he walked in the door, he's like, yeah, we're throwing everything out. And I'm like, nah, now you get the blame for the other two.
Well, and he did the same kind of thing in the middle of Lost, where he set Lost up with all these different stories going on. And he just walked away. And they kind of never finished any of them. Like, I finished that series and still don't know what anything meant.
And they're bringing it back to the current topic, Star Trek The Continuing Mission. A lot of people might listen to this and find out, well, you know, they've brought up stuff and they've never continued it. And this is why I'm saying this. This reads to me like the first season of a Star Trek series, because a lot of times, well, let's face it, the original series, hardly anything ever got carried over or mentioned again. To another episode, because they had all these different writers like D.C. Fontana and stuff control. So there wasn't a thing that, oh, we're going to, possibly the exception of Harry Mudd, you know, we're gonna pick up this character or a storyline and continue it. But of course, you know, the later series, Enterprise and Next Generation, DS9, you know, That was pretty much a common thing. But if you think about it, really, usually you didn't revisit the same topic more than once in a season. I think on DS9 there may have been a couple alternate universe episodes in the same season. But, you know, after they introduced that, there was definitely at least one per year. So, you know, some of these things that have been introduced, like the brain-sucking alien and, you know, the saboteur, there's something else that the beer makes it escape me. Listeners may listen, well, why, you know, they did this and then they dropped it. There's no mention again. And I'm thinking like, well, wait for the second season when it comes.
I don't know if you guys, looked into the webpage where these are all hosted, but the there's a bit about the actors here and the people who put this together, and they got some real acting chops here, and they've got also like some guest stars who showed up who were in like original Star Trek or in Star Trek movies, and like that's pretty impressive. I don't know if you guys noticed any of that.
No, I hadn't. I'll have to look into that, because that's not uncommon for the video series. Either pick up old characters or have same, you know, bring back some of the original actors playing different characters. But
yeah, I think that's what happened here. I think that's what happened here is that they had some of the original actors playing different characters. But like a couple of them I looked into real quick. There's Spice Williams Crosby, who was a Klingon in one of the movies. And she's like a bodybuilder and stuff. You can see from her pictures. There's another woman, Celeste Yarnell, was a crew member in several things. And Lawrence Montaigne was a Vulcan. It's and a couple of these other guys, I recognize their faces. I can't place them, but they're recognizable. And I wish I knew why. I'm gonna have to look them up too. But yeah, they did a good job with this thing. They really did. The only thing that really bothered me a little, well, there's a couple things that bothered me a little, but the one sound effect that I did not think they got right is when they engaged the warp drive, there was a thunderbolt, a thunder crack. I don't remember that being canon. I don't remember that being correct.
Yeah, that was actually, that's funny you say that. That's the one sound effect that I didn't like. It was because of the same thing. It sounds a little more like the movie, like warp jump, but it's not that either. It's kind of like in between. It's like somebody tried to remake a sound.
Yeah, maybe not a sound for warp and they had to invent one.
That's the guy they should have had on there, just being in everything. That's Mark Shepard. I swear, this guy is in everything nerdy.
He would be awesome.
Name something Mark Shepard is in that isn't awesome.
Well, they just he's gonna be in the am I thinking the guy played Apollo originally?
No, that's Richard Hatch.
You're right. I saw something today. He's gonna be a new Star Trek thing, and I'm not tracking on. Mark Shepard is it? Did he play Sarek?
No, he's only been in a little bit of Star Trek. He was some random guy in, I think, Voyager, but he's been in damn near everything else.
I believe Mark Leonard was Sarek.
All right, you're right, and I'm certain he's probably, if not past, certainly retired. It was a weird crossover there. He's most famous for being the bad guy in Here Come the Brides, that old series. And there was actually a Star Trek novel that drops Spock into that universe, you know, time travel thing. And he becomes like Mark's clerk or something.
The only thing other than the Thunderbolt that I didn't like is I had a problem with Jack McGuire, the engineer. I thought he was just a little overacted, or maybe the guy just didn't get an Irish accent quite right, or a combination of both. He was the only guy that I had to struggle through.
Well, let's face it, in the future, I mean, because of TV, all the accents are combining. I bet if you took accents around the United States from 50 years ago, it'd be less homogenous than what we had now. Man, I looked up Mark Shepard. He's what's his name? The King of Hell on Supernatural.
Crowley. But he's been in Supernatural, Warehouse 13, Dollhouse, Star Trek, Firefly, Battlestar Galactica. I swear this guy is in everything and he's fantastic in all of them.
Doctor Who, you missed Doctor Who.
I did. He's got credits all the way back to X-Files.
I never even noticed the guy before. I don't even recognize him. But everything you're naming, I've seen in all his movies on his IMDb page, I've seen. I never even noticed the guy.
Well, that's why I'm jokingly calling him the secret king of the nerds.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck, CSI, Dollhouse, Galactica, my good Burn Notice. My goodness.
Right. Somebody's going to... X1101, you're going to have to email these guys and tell them that he needs to be on an episode.
He might be slightly outside of their pay scale.
Well, so are a lot of these people, though.
24, Medium, Bionic Woman, you know, the remake. All this looks like all CSIs. Monk. Wow.
Yeah, I'm looking at Daniel Roebuck's IMDb page right here, and it just goes on and on and on and on. So it's not like, you know, I... I can't imagine they paid for all these appearances. These are probably people who are just Star Trek fans and wanted to be a part of it, would be my guess. I wish they would see on this page, if you hover over a face, it kind of tells you what they did in the episode, but they only did that for their regular cast members. For their special guests, it doesn't say what character they played or what part they played in this. I wish they would do that.
Yeah, I just posted in the chat the IMDb for Frank Weller. You want to see somebody with a bajillion credits? That's the dude right there. Or Frank Welker, I'm sorry, that's his name.
Oh, that's funny. And the first four that are shown, at least on my version of the page, are all cartoon movies.
No, that's actually what he's known for, is like...
voices.
Yeah, and my understanding is his shtick for a long time was like every time there was like an animal noise in a cartoon, he was the guy they would call. But like he was the voice of Megatron in like Transformers. Like he's done like all these huge like voice acting things, but like his bio list, like you had to like hit the scroll wheel on your mouse like 5 or 6 times just to get past the 2000s. Like that's how much work this guy has done.
Yeah, you really do. He's got Flintstones credits. He's got the Super Globetrotters TV series credits.
I had to hit the scroll wheel 20 times to get down to 1999.
Okay, they should use this guy too. He passes muster.
I think he has a solid bio. I think we could trust him.
That's all I can think to say about these episodes without getting into spoilers.
Yep, I think I need a drink and we need to spoil this stuff.
So you guys wait for the spoilers to take a drink?
Yes.
If it's a special drink, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I've been drinking non-special drink. I'm ready for my...
That's the other thing is I've been hammered enough on podcasts and it was embarrassing that I don't want to do that to myself if I can help it.
All right, I'll be right back. I got to go fetch mine.
Now. What's that, 50?
I said you're cutting in and out now.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, you're good now, but you were cutting in and out.
Well, I hope it doesn't happen again. I don't know what's going on, whether it's my router or my modem, but I had one router crap out on me, and I'm using a backup unit, and I've ordered a new one.
And what, you know, what this book club puts me in mind of, you know, if somebody can come up with a script, again, I can't think of a more international cast than the HPR contributors. You know, if we want an Irish engineer, I'm certain Ken Fallon could control the leprechaun voice of the fake Ken Fallon or something.
Boy, bring me back my lucky charms.
I was going to say, that's like Pokey's two actual like voice credits is Space Pokey and fake Ken Fallon.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know Pokey was the fake Ken Fallon.
I didn't either.
You did it once on the show, and it was hilarious. And actually, X1101 and I were talking about it in the back channel when he was editing the episode that it's in. And he was like, this is in reference to something that we're not actually going to do, but I can't take it out because it's hilarious.
That is kind of funny. I don't even remember doing it. Now I can't wait to hear the episode.
And we have a plethora of Scots, not including me, because I can't fake a Scottish accent in a can, but we've got Thistleweb and Kevy. So please, somebody hit us up with a space opera script.
Lost in Bronx, I'm looking at you.
You don't think he's a little out of our league, huh?
Nah, he can come down to us. It's okay.
All right, X1101, would you go and fetch for your beverage this week?
I have diabetes in a bottle. I have real sugar Mountain Dew.
Oh, yeah, that would be real diabetes in a bottle. Now, what is that like? Is it? I don't think I've ever had it.
It's pretty much like regular Mountain Dew, having just said it, except it tastes more real and less like artificial sweeteners.
Oh, that's cool. I don't think I've had Mountain Dew in years.
I used to live on the stuff when I was in high school and college, but I drink so little of it now because I drink so much water. But I kind of wanted something different, and I've been wanting these for a while, so I figured it was something different.
That's cool. Taj, anything interesting this week?
I'm going to continue with my series of completely just doing something besides a drink because I'm drinking water, and apparently that's lame. So we're going to go on with the crap that I'm stuffing in my face that I probably shouldn't be eating. And I have a giant bowl of generic Kroger brand chocolate ice cream. And it's mildly passable for chocolate ice cream, but it's still satisfying.
Oh, that's exciting. 50, what do you got, buddy?
Well, I don't think I can top Kroger ice cream, but because I've had that and it is, as far as taste, but it's probably better for, you know, if you can't taste it, that's probably a better thing for. But I was just about to clean out a glass, and let me preface this. I went to the doctor a couple weeks ago, and the doctor told me they think I had diverticulitis and put me on some really powerful antibiotics that they said, no, you can't drink because we'll hurl these antibiotics. And so I just finished that regimen up Sunday. So my second day of freedom. And to celebrate, I bought myself, well, you know, I'm going to be here with my old friend, Johnny Walker Black. So... give me a minute because I got to clean out a glass, but I'll be presently happy.
For sure.
And, you know, we'll see about hard liquor. Beer still tastes funny to me, you know, 2 days away from the medication.
Well, I imagine it was probably the 14 or so days on the medication that made it taste funny rather than the 2 days off.
Well, I mean, that's it wasn't recommended by the doctor. I looked up the medication in question and they said, no. You shouldn't drink anything for 3 days after your...
Huh.
That's almost always my question when they prescribe me a medication. Can I drink with this? No? Can you prescribe something else?
I don't think I've ever asked that.
I should have done that.
I've never actually asked if they could prescribe something else, but...
But I will now, damn it.
Well, I'm kind of proud of myself. For 10 days, I did not go into... I ate a lot of and pop and candy in lieu of alcohol. Even though the alcohol tastes funny, I will try.
So have you poured a glass of it yet? Are you going to tell us how it tastes and do a review?
Please don't wait on me to do a review. I can insert that later.
Okay. Well, I'm not drinking tonight either because I got to work in the morning. So I'm racking my brain. There's about a million things I could review over the past month. I've had a good month. But I think... the one I would like to review, and maybe just do a generic review here, is I installed some LED light bulbs in several rooms in my house, and I put most of them, maybe even all of them, on dimmer switches. And I got to say, that's the way to go. We put some in the kitchen, and they're the like natural daylight color. And that's pretty good for the kitchen. It's a bit harsh for other rooms. My daughter doesn't even like it in the kitchen, but that's pretty decent. And I put some in the bedroom, and they're a soft white, they're calling it. They're like 2700K for color temperature, and they look just right in there. And when you get the right kind of dimmers for an LED, and they're a little expensive, but they're adjustable so that you take the switchblade off, and you set it to where you want the lowest light to be, and then the slider on the switch does all the rest of the work. But you get the right kind of switch behind a dimmable LED bulb, and the effect is really nice. About as nice as any other dimmable light, I'm sure. But, I love dimmable lights, and these LEDs are really, really nice. So that's my review. Get yourself some LED bulbs and dimmer switch. Be a happy person. Did I just disconnect? It says 50 did, but now I'm not hearing anybody. You guys still there?
I'm still here.
Still here.
Okay. All right, Hugh. I thought maybe my router crapped out again.
So you want to spoil this thing?
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
I have one major issue with the whole series, and it has to do with recasting.
What's that then? Oh, you mean the girl who died and then... They used her again for her own needs or something?
No. Although that was... Actually, I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. I was going to forgive him for that. It was weak, but it was funny.
It was very, like...
It confused me for a little bit.
It was very, like, cheap sci-fi, like, cost-cutting measures. I liked it. Now, my big thing is the last two episodes, I think, when they recast the captain. Like, he is so different. And even the character is so different. It's like a totally different person with the same name. I get that you can't get somebody that has as good of a voice as the guy originally that did it. I get that. But, like, the guy that they got is so totally different. I'm like, why didn't you just kill the original captain and then, like, make a new character? Because, I mean, that would create all kinds of new drama, you know, like this old crew being captained by a new captain, like from the 24th century when they're from the 23rd. Like, that would be a really cool dynamic. I don't know why they felt the need to recast that same character, especially if they knew it was going to have to change.
I totally missed that. And part of it is because I didn't listen to them, as I was saying earlier, I didn't listen in the right order. I heard the Cthulhu episode first and then came back to the rest of it. So I hope you can forgive me for not noticing that he was different at that point. But I think the other episode's the one where they were on Earth, so he was drunk and slurring anyway, right?
Right, which is just like, yeah, I don't know. It was just like, it was so, he was so different. Just the way he acted, and when he, you know, just the cadence was different. It was like it was an intentional choice to not try to emulate the original actor, which I get. That's a choice you can make. But at the same time, if you know that it's going to be that big of a deal, why don't you, especially because it's flexible. You don't have to. It's your story. Like, you could change anything you want. Why would you keep that character? I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. Boy, I'm glad I missed it.
You brought up the other thing I hated, which was the Cthulhu episode.
You hated that one?
Oh, I love that.
I have a problem with any, like, a lot of sci-fi shows or a lot of anything, really, let's be honest, has a Cthulhu episode or like something that's like Lovecraftian, or like, it's just like there's a bunch of things that have done that. And my problem with it is, for whatever reason, and it's hilarious because it kind of just fits with like the theme of sort of the Cthulhu mythos, is that like whenever you inject that into another story, that story instantly ceases to be, you know, the feel of that kind of story. It instantly becomes a Lovecraft story. Like, it stops being Star Trek. It's a Cthulhu story.
It was Cthulhu in space. It was perfect. It was really well executed. But I do get your point. But it was perfect.
Oh man, I just and I thought of you, Taj, when they said non-Euclidean.
I knew, like, as soon as they started talking about, like, that was one of the words. They said a couple of the other words that we, like, nailed when we did the Call of Cthulhu. I was like, this is pretty much perfect for us.
It was very funny to me that it came up that way. But hearing it, that was the first episode that I heard, I was like, oh, no, really? But then I kind of got into it. It was fine. But, like, you could hear the chanting. You could hear them saying things in that. As much as they tried, it seemed like they tried avoiding specific, you know, Cthulhu verbiage in the script. Like, all the background noises, you could hear them chanting Cthulhu and Relier and all that kind of stuff.
Except the specific non-Euclidean. That's kind of one of the instant touch words for, nope, this is going to be Lovecraft.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even think they tried to avoid it. When they started talking about Nardlhotep, I was like, nope, you're not even trying anymore. Like, that is specifically like Cthulhu. Like, that is a Cthulhu thing.
Is it? I guess I wasn't familiar with that name.
Yeah, was Nardlhotep, was that in Cthulhu directly, or was that in one of the other Lovecraft stories?
I believe it's in one of the other Cthulhu stories. I know it from the Call of the Cthulhu RPG. But, yeah, it's like one of the big names in like the Cthulhu mythos.
Oh, okay.
I would say I haven't read all of Lovecraft's stuff yet, so that might be why I missed it.
Okay, I'm blown away by this. I did not catch until I heard you guys talking and looking back at the episode credits that they'd switched the captain, the new actor.
Yeah, I somehow missed that too.
You guys are pulling my chain, right? I'm not the only person that like really felt that was completely different.
No, I had no idea. But like I said, I heard them out of order. So the, you know, episode 8, the Cthulhu one, I heard first anyway. So it wasn't a different captain to me. I was still getting used to the series. And then episode 7, he was drunk. You know, he was slurring anyway. So I just totally missed it.
Now, on my player, Sans Eclipse and the stock software. One thing I seem to like about the stock clip software, I mean, I can pick up podcasts right in the middle where I left off, you know, not just one, but several of Rockbox software. Every time you upload new files, you lose your place.
Not if you enable the database, then you can do bookmarks.
Okay, well, I wasn't intentionally doing bookmarks, but it was like, you know, I could listen to four or five podcasts and come back right to the place where I'd left them off. That not being here or there, then the first seven episodes were in the right order, and then the metadata on eight must have been different because, like, off in on, but that was okay.
Yeah, the clip stock firmware does read metadata, and the default for Rockbox is to read file names and do them alphabetically. So that's the difference there for sure.
Yeah, I had to go through and, like Pokey did, I had to add the numbers on Rockbox to get them in the right order.
So what was everybody's favorite episode?
Oh, I love the Cthulhu one. It was just too perfect.
Psycho Vulcan all the way. That was awesome.
Psycho Vulcan was cool. But I kind of like the one with the other aliens who they had to teleport the photon torpedo onto their ship to kill them. But then they were like, oh, there's so many more of us than you can imagine.
That was
the brain-sucking aliens. You know, like I said, you know, expect them maybe to return to that. But, you know, wait for season two, whenever that comes out.
Yeah, if this were to, like, you know, ramp up and catch on, have many, many episodes, I can see that alien species being this series's Borg or Q, you know, just the recurring menace that's completely undefeatable on a large scale. But episode by episode, we can keep outsmarting them.
That is actually the one thing that this has so far lacked is Q. But
well, I know, because Q only ever took an interest in Picard.
But he's in all of the other series. All the series is after that, I should say.
The only time it counts is when Sisko punches him in the face.
That's fantastic.
I don't remember that one. Maybe I should rewatch all those series too.
I don't know. Janeway and Q is always funny.
I just love that Q is on one episode of DS9 and he gets busted in the face and he never comes back. He's just like, nah, you know, I'm not having it.
I may be, you know, more powerful than all of time and space, but he hit me and I don't like it.
That's kind of funny.
Though I think that was early enough in DS9 that Sisko was trying, they were trying with Sisko's character to show that he was not Picard. And so, you know, he hits Q and Q says, oh, Picard never hit me. And then Sisko says directly to him, I'm not Picard. And I think they're trying to say, this is something completely different. Do not expect TNG from this.
Yeah, but I think the first episode of DS9, that scene where Picard is sitting there with Sisko and just like, Sisko's not having it. Like, he's just like, nuh-uh, we're not having this conversation. Get off my station. That's when you knew that they were not alike at all.
Well, I can understand.
It seems like I've come to the right place because it seems like I'm always in the minority where the post-original series far and away, DS9 is my favorite. And most of the time I express that opinion, I am pounded down.
Well, then you hang out with people who are just wrong.
I agree. DS9 is the best.
I don't know if it's the best, but it's fantastic. They're all good, man. All of them were good. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Even Voyager was fantastic.
See, as I've said before, I have some strange nostalgia with Voyager because that was my Star Trek, as in I watched it from premiere to finale live. But going back, it, to me, ages the least well. It doesn't hold up well time. For me, I think I see it through the rose-colored lenses of memory, and it was so good in my memory, and then it just isn't. And so, you know, because I never saw DS9 until I watched it on Netflix and binge watched it. There is no rose-tinted glasses of memory, so you just saw it for what it was, and it is really just a better show.
Was it only good because of the holographic Doctor? Because he's probably my favorite character. He's the only one I really remember from Deep Space Nine. Excuse me, from Voyager.
For me, it was good because it was what I was watching as I was growing up.
Also, 7 of 9. Duh.
Yeah, my whole thing with DS9 is like, I love Roddenberry, and I love Roddenberry's vision, and I love TNG. Like, that was my growing up. Like, when I was, you know, a kid and a teenager, TNG was what was on TV. So, like, that's what I got. But I guess DS9 hit at that perfect time when I was old enough to get it, and Roddenberry had died. And so he had this edict for a long time that everything has to be this utopian world, which is beautiful. I mean, it's a great idea. It's wonderful. But you can't tell too many really good stories in that world. Like when Ron Moore and the people who did DS9 had free reign because nobody was standing over them and telling them they couldn't. They're like, we're going to have a war and we're going to see what happens to the Federation when that happens. And that just completely opened up a whole new version of Star Trek that nobody had ever seen, which was fantastic.
But what happened? Also, it's very character-driven, and the characters are somewhat whimsical in that, you know. I mean, you've got, you know, the bartender there. Geez, now I don't remember any of their names. You had Odo, you know, with his shape-shifting. You just had all kinds of crazy interpersonal reactions there that just didn't happen on the other ones. The other ones were more story-based.
Well, I mean,
when, you know, second generation amalgam. How should I say it? You know, well, you know, there was in the original Star Trek. Yes, we, you know, Next Generation was whitewash. Everybody's happy over that, and DS9 was gritty underbelly. Let's take a look.
Well, like everybody always says that, like the original Star Trek was like sold as like wagon train to the stars, like it was supposed to be a Western in space. DS9 is a Western in space, like for real. You have a bartender. Like, it's an outpost, like, way out in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's a Western, and, like, the construction of the characters and stuff is a Western. But then, crap, I was going to say something. I can't remember what it was now. I had a great point, and now it's gone.
Well, I mean, even in the later series, you know, the character, the outsider security off, and everybody's trying to tell him, you know, Quark's not so bad. He's, at least he's the devil we know. And, you know, if we take him out, there's, somebody's going to take his place, and we...
I mean, just the fact that they start the show, like the main premise of the show is like, we're here and this is like post a Holocaust just happened. Like the Bajorans have been like basically thinly veiled World War II, you know, reference, you know, and just that they built around that. Like those were two like species in TNG that nobody gave a damn about. And they turned them into like two really complex like civilizations, which was awesome.
Well, the
that was very complex. I mean, the Bajorans were at the same time they were the Palestinian, they were the resistance. You know, so many things. You know, they did things. They were all these, but they being besieged, they did these unthinkable acts. You were both on the side rooting for. Sometimes maybe that was going a little too far.
Well, about one of their prime ministers, it was said in an episode I just saw, he knows exactly how to deal with terrorists. He used to be one. And that...
Well, it's the old saying, you know, man's terrorist is...
It was also, like, the first time that, like, Star Trek dealt, like, just, like, on the nose with religion. I mean, the first episode, they're like, yeah, you're the emissary. You're, like, this messiah. And they actually pay it off at the end of the series. Like, they play it the whole way through.
Oh, that made me so mad the first time I saw it, because one of my friends, he knew I was watching it, but he thought I'd seen it before, and he spoiled the end for me. Two things. He spoiled Dax dying, and he spoiled the whole Sisko Messiah thing at the end, and I'm just like, I hate you so much. I didn't know either of those things.
Yeah, in the novels, didn't know that either. Did they ever get Sisko out of hell? Or, you know, I kind of got the impression right after that, no, we are not going to touch the DS9 universe post-last episode, because that's for Paramount.
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch this, because I've heard before that, you know, DS9 was kind of a knockoff of Babylon 5, and I thought the Messiah thing was pretty big in Babylon 5, the episodes of that I saw. And maybe I just missed a few of the Deep Space Nine episodes, because I never heard any of that about him being any kind of messiah.
Oh, the Babylon 5 and DS9 ripoff, there's no doubt in my mind. I love both shows, like irrationally love both shows. It's totally DS9 was a ripoff. Like, he shopped it to Paramount, took it to him, and they're like, nah, we'll pass. And then he goes somewhere else and makes the show. And then, like, that season or the next season, they come up with DS9, which is basically the same premise.
Yeah, yeah. With better graphics.
Well, they weren't. I think, like, Babylon 5, if I remember correctly, like, they shot that whole show, like, in an old hot tub factory because it was the only thing that they could find that was in their budget range or something stupid like that.
And that's okay. That works out sometimes, you know, like, you know, the soldiers' uniforms, the Space Marines' uniforms left over in the costume department when they shot Firefly, you know, from Starship Troopers. You know what I mean? Like, that shit works out sometimes, and it's fine.
Well, I've seen a thing on, you know, how they did B5, and it was like all the walls for all the offices when walked into them look really solid. And if you tap it, you know, it's just a stretched frame of fabric, incredibly flimsy.
So what else did people, like, really dig about the audio series?
I'm glad you're bringing it back to that. I keep struggling to do so. I liked a lot about it. I'll tell you what I didn't like about it, and it took me a little bit to get over it, and I did. It was okay. But from episode one, man, I don't like Star Trek's time travel at all. Every episode of Star Trek that's ever had time travel in it has just, I've found annoying, and I never liked it.
I think DS9 does a good one where somehow the crew gets pulled back into TOS time frame in Trouble with Tribbles, but...
Yeah, that one was cute. I remember that. That was cute.
And graphically really well done. They pull all of it together. I was just astounded by the cinematography of that episode when I saw it. But other than that, you're right. Time travel has been a little hokey.
I thought that episode was kind of weak, you know, especially bar scene. Worf says, yes, they are Klingons, which had never, you know, never been explained why the Klingons, the original series, look so different from Klingons from, you know, from
everything else.
Yes, everything else. And I really thought that was very, very weak when they finally explained it for Enterprise. You know, Klingon scientists decided to incorporate the superhuman Khan DNA and give it to Klingon. That's why they look. I mean, there were explanations in the books, you know, that the two Klingon species came up because of the herd, and the human looking one, you know, crossbreeds with the herd, the invaders, because we're this feudal empire, you know, they didn't have any technology, and then the herd lands on their planet and enslaves them, and after 300-400 years they finally, you know, kill all the herd, but it leaves them with two distinct species. Ones with all the head rigid and stuff. So I thought that was a much better explanation of the difference than they did during.
How does that explain why they look so much like Battlefield Earth?
Well, they don't have six fingers and they're not 50 feet tall.
Oh, okay. Now, I'm glad I got laughed at for that.
And they don't have a crazy religion based around the guy that wrote them.
I beg to differ.
They worship a guy who killed their gods. That's a little bit of a crazy religion to their first emperor.
Yeah, but the whole, like, head ridges thing wasn't even consistent when they came up with it, because there was, like, a DS9 episode where it had the original series Klingons in it, and they had bumpy heads. So it's like, what? How did they suddenly get bumpy heads? Like, if they're the augment ones, you know, they should have the smooth heads even then, but they hadn't come up with that yet, so they just played it fast and loose, I guessed.
I think the idea
was that, you know, the good day to die one where you had all the antagonists to Kirk come back together and, you know, join with the Trill. Which is one of my favorite episodes. I'm assuming when they came up with the cure, then they applied it to everybody. So, you know, these guys were original series, they were afflicted with human DNA, and they have the technology to, you know, instantly remove all the human DNA, and they snap back to being.
If I remember correctly, Worf was just like, yeah, well, we don't like to talk about that. And that was enough for me. I don't know why they had to go any further than that.
That was hilarious. That was like the best
week
line.
Because, you know, you would think of all the history and stuff, they would be looking at pictures, and Klingons looked this one way, unless it was, you know, because, you know, an alliance between the Federation and the Klingons and, you know, sanitizing all the history. You would think, it, you know, it's only been 50 years or whatever, they would notice.
So let's go through the list of things that augment blood, like, magically can cure. Bumpy foreheads. And it can bring people back from the dead. So that's not a MacGuffin or anything.
Sounds like we've got our plot bullets.
Hey, let me ask you guys this. Since this was the bridging of gaps between, you know, first gen and next gen. And maybe I'm wrong about this because I'm not the hugest Star Trek fan. But one thing that stuck out to me when I was watching, you know, some of the original series versus some of the next generation stuff. I thought that, like, Warp 9 was the maximum that Next Gen was ever able to go until some of the real later episodes where there was time travel involved or next Gen stuff. So, like, Riker had a ship that could go faster, I thought, when he was a captain. But these guys were going Warp 10 the whole time, weren't they?
No, Warp 9.9 is the theoretical maximum.
Yeah, Warp 10 is transwarp.
Yeah, I didn't think they ever talked about 4, 6, or 7 in the—
Okay, maybe I'm wrong.
Because I think they explain transwarp is, as soon as you hit that, you, like, simultaneously exist at all points in the universe at the same time, and you can just, like, pop in and out of wherever you want to be.
If you're in the Voyager crew, you turn into some crazy lizard person.
Yeah, let's— I was gonna say, we've covered that.
That's my least favorite Voyager.
It was pretty bad.
That's everybody's least favorite Voyager episode.
I existed at all points and everywhere, and now I'm a lizard person.
And there's a cure.
So anyways, back to the audio drama.
Yeah. This is at the point when the doctor sashays in and fixes everything. And I don't mean holographic doctor.
Maybe I'm a total uber nerd, but I kind of wish these guys would totally, because like we were saying, they have these art, the art for like the cover art for the episodes. I want to see a 3D model of this ship because I'm sick of only seeing half of it. Like, maybe because I'm a Star Trek geek and like I'm the one bought the technical manuals and like looked at the ships and was like, ooh, ah, this is pretty. I really want to see this ship because it's like, it seems cool. And it's not a class that is listed anywhere to where you can find like even a made up version of the ship. So it's like, I would really like to see that.
Yeah. And no two of these pictures.
Yeah, I want to see that and all the ships that they encounter because, you know, about a month ago I was on like this Trek history site and it had like all the, you know, all the starships from the 21st century, you know, 25th, or and the evolution of one, and not just the Federation ships. It had, you know, the Romulan and the Klingon ships, the D5 crew.
And none of these ships look similar enough to me to be satisfying. They all seem to have differences.
Yeah, it's like they can't decide. Like 5150 was saying, it almost looks like they took the NX class and just threw some like movie nacelles on it from one angle, and then you look at it from another angle, it looks like a totally different ship. So it's like, I would love to see that, because I mean, you from next gen, you know that there are still ships trolling around from that period. Like, they're old and, you know, they don't do much, but they're still around. I mean, it would just be cool to see, like, you know, that back story part of it. It would fill it out more, especially because I imagine it being like one of the movie ships, like not very nice and cushy, like, because even they were complaining, like, they're putting a holodeck on here. Who needs a holodeck? That's stupid.
Yeah, they were like, carpet? What the hell?
Well, yeah, there was like that one episode of, I think it was Next Generation, but, they took the model for the Janolan from the one where they brought back Scotty and distressed it. It was a cargo ship, and it was originally would have been a original series generation, and presented as questionable of smuggler guys ships. So yeah, I would like to see more of that,
because I imagine like the other ships like running around at this time, because the Galaxy class isn't done, are like Enterprise C ships. Like, they're still like solidly like the movie designs with like new nacelles on it. So it would just, for me, just my nerd side, I just want to be like, what does this ship look like?
It's no Defiant.
I mean, this comes back to whole Abrams, that they scan this. You know, I thought it kind of silly in the first movie. mining ship. You know, even 70 years later, it was advanced enough to just, you know, kill every military ship that it came up against. That kind of, you know, didn't sit well.
There's a reason for that.
Go on.
But you know,
is it lens flares?
No, actually, it's not. It's actually one of my favorite things that actually came out of the Abrams verse things. Before the first movie came out, they did a comic book series that was canon. It was the first comic book series that was officially canon. And it was set in the Prime timeline. And it's basically Data is the captain of the Enterprise. And like, it basically tells a story of like Spock trying to help Romulus. Like he's still there from reunification and stuff. And they know that I forget what happened. The sun goes nova or something's going wrong. And that's why the Romulan planet's blowing up. And so it explains Nero. Like it goes back and explains why that villain, because like in the movie, he's terrible. He's a terrible villain. He's just like, I'm angry. There's a whole reason for that. And it's why he hates Spock is because of this whole thing that's in this comic book. But they were trying to find a way to stop it. And so they took that mining ship and all the stuff that's on the outside of it is Borg tech. Like they basically just outfitted it with as much Borg tech as they could get.
So that thing can toast pretty much anything ever.
Yeah, it's like the baddest ship in the universe. And it also explains that the little like jellyfish thing that Spock flies was invented by Geordi, which makes me happy.
What's what?
So like in the Abrams movie, the little ship that Spock flies, it looks like a spinning jellyfish thing. Geordi LaForge is the guy that designed it. Like he leaves Starfleet to like design ships. And that was like his like master design was that ship.
Oh, that's funny. Okay.
Of all the series, in all the ships I've seen, the Defiant is still my favorite.
It's pretty beast, man. It's a little ship just made for kicking ass.
You know, they're lucky at the Klingon. Their tech is not nearly sophisticated, nor the Romulan as the Federation. You know, both of them, they build warships. Yeah, we've got a science ship.
So whose ship was the Defiant?
That was Sisko's ship in DS9, but it's docked at the station, and it's there for their kind of eventual war and general ass-kicking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was designed to fight the Borg, but the Borg didn't come back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It was specifically like the Federation crapping its pants, going, what are we going to do against this Borg? Let's build something just to fight them.
The USS, fuck you.
And, of course, completely different from any other design, because we think, well, there's probably a reason they put the warp nacelles clear out here on arms away from the, you know, and then the Defiant is like, oh, screw it. We're going to put everything together. If the motherfuckers die from radiation, so be it.
Let me tell you how the planning meeting went for the design of the Defiant. Somebody probably walked in with this pretty cool looking ship. And then somebody on the right, somebody who was running that show goes, I want a goddamn Federation version of the Millennium Falcon. Can you make that happen?
Oh, I think you're right there. And apologize for my language, but this won't be the first cited for.
Oh, I always mark mine explicit.
Yeah, I do too. So now, all right. So now I'm looking for better pictures of the Defiant because I was going to pictures of like all the Star Trek Enterprise class ships or different classes of ships, and the Defiant's so small it doesn't show up clearly on any of the pictures that show all the ships.
So anyways, back to the audio drama.
Yeah, I assume you guys have that you know, JPEG background as like every ship from a sci-fi series. It's like ridiculous by relativity. The Star Trek vessels is tiny, and forget Star.
And then there's the Galactica that's just gigantic.
Yeah, but there's bigger stuff out there in sci-fi than even the Galacticas.
Yeah, Spaceball 1. What? It was really, really big.
Yeah, but if you think about it, like, Star Trek ship-to-ship combat is not what actual ship-to-ship combat would be. It would be like Galactica. Like, it would be just like it was on the ocean. Broadside, so you can get as many cannons on the person as you can, and lots of little fighters to just mess things up. Like, you wouldn't have two ships flying around just shooting each other that big. That's a waste of time.
That's pretty much
I don't know. I mean, a Star Wars excuse why the big ships aren't as fast as, you know, that's why they have fighters. You know, the fighters are flying nearly 10 times of the capital. In space, you really wouldn't have that.
well, momentum that would let you change your speed faster in a smaller ship. But I don't know. It's from all the space battles I've seen and or heard, I think Lost in Bronx did them the best.
I'd like to see more. I would like to hear more of his space battles. I'm looking at you, Lost in Bronx.
Well, I think now that his main character is a space gunner, we hopefully count on that. I'm not sure we'll see Eddie Kay.
I would oddly be okay with that.
He would dress them down. I don't know if he'd shoot them down.
I think Saul could probably shoot a whole ship at us. You know, folks, that anybody's going to eventually be, what the hell were they?
We opened a can of worms of talking about Star Trek. Anything Star Trek is going to devolve into just like Star Trek. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah, it's hard. I keep trying to stay on topic here in this one, and it's just really hard to do. I mean, they were all, for the most part, they were really excellent episodes. They're all really well acted, and they all reminded me of stuff from other Star Trek episodes. So, what am I supposed to do here? My hands are completely untied.
Well, I'm glad my suggestion you carried through so well. I was afraid when I suggested you guys would be say, what the hell did you...
It was a good change. Like, I love the audiobooks. Like, I don't want to stop that. But, like, it was nice to do something different just to kind of, like, I don't know, just a nice little change of pace, a little palate cleanser before we move on.
And I should say, you know, while these episodes are free to download, Creative Commons, like a lot of what we talk about, and RSS feed, you know, I guess Ken Fallon did that for us, because originally you had to go to episodes and each episode's webpage.
Yeah, I was about to do exactly that. And then on the HPR mailing list, lo and behold, someone already did it, which seems to happen a lot.
HPR mailing list for the win. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess here's normally where we do our final thoughts, but I think I've said my final thoughts two or three times that I really enjoyed this, that we did hit more ups and downs. And the acting, I think, is what stood out more than anything, though the audio production was top-notch as well.
Yeah, one thing I would point out, I mean, I wish there was a little more character development. Obviously, we were meant to feel the loss of the science officer. You know, unfortunately, in the previous episodes, pretty much she was relegated to saying, you know, scanning so-and-so, Captain, blah, blah. You know, I wish they developed her character a lot more, her niece's character, after her death than they did before. And I rather imagine that came about because whoever the actress was contributing had to come to them and say, you know, things have come up in my life and I can't continue, and they adapted the series. I don't know that, but I'm guessing.
Yeah, when you have an all-volunteer cast, you kind of have to, you know, work with what you've got. It's tough to say, hey, we need you to be on this for our schedule. So it's completely forgivable as well. But I think that's why a lot of people do, solo productions too. Not that one is any better than the other. It's certainly grand when something like this comes together and is this good.
And I want to repeat, man, you know, if somebody wants to create a script for HPR with our, you know, pretty much international cast, I would be so up for contributing to that. If you need a Midwestern drunk off his butt for something,
volunteering like to be a town drunk in a space opera.
Yes. You know, I could be the town weapons officer. Why the hell did you miss that?
Fair enough. X1101 or Todd, either of you guys, final thoughts?
It was a welcome change. It was something a little different. And it was fun to have an excuse to go even further down the rat hole into Star Trek than we usually do.
Yeah, I can agree. I agree. It's nice to do Star Trek. It is a well-made Star Trek audio drama. Trust me, you can do worse. There are some out there that are horrendous and you shouldn't listen to. This is a safe one. And while I've got the mic, Marvel Comics, DC Comics, we did Star Wars, we did Battlestar. What else did we miss? Dungeons and Dragons. I don't think we talked about it in the pre-show. And various sundry other things.
I think we could just say Mark Shepard again and cover pretty much everything.
Dang, he's like a nerd hyperlink.
I wonder if he's the Kevin Bacon of nerds.
I think Kevin Bacon's big enough. He is the Kevin Bacon of nerds.
You're probably right.
Yeah, but I think we could connect everything from Mark Shepard in three links.
So I'm going to jump in here and thank everyone for listening and thank everyone for participating and put the title on our next book here, if you guys don't mind.
Go for it.
Please do your brother's books you were talking about.
Dude, yeah. I'm so excited about this.
So, yeah, this is actually not a book I've ever talked about because I have nothing to say about it yet. I've never listened to it. This is one of the few books that, you know, comes with such high recommendation that I haven't listened to. And it's still, even after a month, I'm looking at the page now, still has a 100% rating on this. So the book is Tincture, an Apocalyptic Proposition by Matthew D. Jordan. It's available on patiobooks.com, and there are two books in the series, and they both start with the word tincture, so be sure you're getting book one, or else the conversation's going to be really skewed and not, you know, it's going to be abnormal. but yeah, so Tincture, an Apocalyptic Proposition by Matthew D. Jordan, and I have not read it at all. From what I gather, it's like a post-apocalyptic story, and no one is really sure what the apocalypse was or how it happened. It just kind of happened, just kind of a de-evolution into post-apocalypticness. So from the patiobooks.com page, it says, Ramuel and the last of his family, Aberinia, maybe, travel their barren world shack to shack, selling tinctures to keep a full belly and evading the dogmatists to keep their throats safe. Time has turned funny after the whatever, an apocalyptic event that few remember and even fewer can explain. Danger now as commonplace as the unrecognizable relics of war and the madman of Fulan, along with an iron rule over his small township, may hold the answers. With a cure for the sick and a passion to uncover what happened to their world, Ramuel and Abraniah set off on a journey to the other place the days before the whatever, and ready themselves for a glimpse into what happened and what was always meant to happen next. So the whatever sounds really cool, that, hey, there's an apocalypse, or was, but no one really knows what it was. We don't remember it.
I love how apathetic it sounds, like the whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So I got a head start on you guys. I've already got this one downloaded, and I put it on my MP3 player, so I'll probably be listening to episode one on my way to work tomorrow. So that's that.
This time tomorrow night, I have a fraternity meeting at Boulevard Brewing Company in Kansas City, Missouri. And hopefully, whatever the beer tastes like, I'm going to be entirely blotto by this time tomorrow night. However, I do intend to leave my truck at the hotel which I'm staying at. They've said that they have shuttles back and forth, and if not, there'll be taxis and stuff. So no worries to folks who might think I might be doing something inconsidered and frankly illegal. So
wouldn't have even thought to accuse you of it until you brought it up.
Oh, I've had some people say, oh no, if you have one drink you can't drive, and it's like, well, and this, at KLF, I was very careful to drink only what I could metabolize evening, though I might have wished I could have done otherwise, but I was driving, and that was the thing.
Well, it's probably enough said on that then. And I'll just say, unless anybody's got anything else, thanks everybody, and have a great night. Have a great month. We'll see you next month.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.
The Stirling engine, like, if the problem is, it's the problem with everything. It's like material science. We don't have something strong enough and light enough to make it work. But when we do, that Stirling engine could be, like, fantastic.
Now, the other problem with the Stirling engine is the lighter the gas you can put in it, the better it works. However, you don't want a tight seal, and the lighter the gas, the quicker it leaks out of that seal. So it's got a couple of problems, the Stirling engine does.
Well, apparently this was the first 3D printed one that didn't have to have liquid in it as the it was all just oxygen and ambient oxygen. You know, it looks like you know, the piston in it is about like the size of CD or DVD, and it's only moving back and forth about a quarter inch.
Yeah, the big piston doesn't move far.
I'm surprised nobody, when we talked about solar sailing, mentioned the work of Nathan Lowell. I mean, that's the whole method of transportation, his quarter share series.
Now I have to read those.
I was going to say, I didn't mention it because I've not read them yet.
You guys haven't listened to those?
Not yet. I would almost recommend that you two guys drop off right now and go to Podio Books and download the entire quarter share series. But
you're just trying to get rid of us.
No, he's right. If we didn't need you for the show, we'd make you.
Damn.
Yeah, that series is excellent.
That's the one that we read the like prequel to, or like sidequel, or I forget what was the name of that one.
No, we listened to a book read by that guy, but he didn't even write it.
No, we did. It's in the same universe,
yeah.
The one on the planet with the fishing people. What am I thinking of?
Yeah, Shaman Tales, South Coast. Yes, that's right. That is not on the same level.
Okay, because I was like interested in that, but not terribly. So making it in space makes it a lot more interesting to me.
Oh yeah, definitely his best work is the quarter share series. I've listened to all of it. The one with the witch or whatever, that was, I mean, it's all good. But no, if you're judging his writing by Shaman Tale, no, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah, I had more hours in a day.
I agree. Shaman Tales is not bad, but it is not. It's not Traitor's Tales either.
And Nathan, if you're listening, we want the next quarter share book.
What do you mean? He's finished them.
Well, that's true. He said he might revisit the some of the same characters or something like that. I'm thinking Ishmael, now that he's retired, may go back and look up his old friends' books.
No, what I heard was that he was going to write more books in that universe, but it would be like the kind of underworld, the crime story type books, which sound really, really neat, sound very interesting. But I think he's done with Ishmael. That's what he said. I could be wrong, but I thought he said that.
Speaking of underworld, anything recently on this Thing of Ours front?
No, I think it's dead. It was good while it lasted.
Well, it's like this book we're going to talk about tonight. You know, it seems, or not book, but episodic series. I caught it when there were, you know, seven episodes. The eighth one, actually, that one showed up after I originally. And then between the time I listened to it originally and when I mentioned it to you guys, you know, the ninth one seems to be in the works, but it's, you know, these things, they take this incredible amount of time.
Yeah, well, I don't want to talk about that till we're doing the review. We can get into whenever you like. We can start whenever you like.
Now, one thing I think we might want to ask ourselves before we start, where do we put the break
Before the spoilers. We just won't spoil any of the stories. It could be very early on, if that's what you're saying or asking.
Yeah, because we don't have to do a lot of the background because it's Star Trek. I mean, most of the people listening kind of already know the background.
Well, I think, you know, maybe we should make the break where Numi gets shoved out the airlock.
Spoilers.
Yeah, we're recording now, bro.
Hey, Taj, did you see the link I threw in there about the Thorn dice set? It's they're beautiful.
Yeah, I wish old boy would like open source the files for him, because yeah, I would totally print those. They're badass looking.
I know a guy who's got them. I wouldn't consider them particularly practical, but they are gorgeous.
I've never seen them in black. I've only seen them white, but that they look great painted up.
Dude, you're a baller if you walk up to the table and you roll those dice. I'm sorry. You're just like the coolest person at the table, whether they're practical or not.
And I just went and added the entire Trader Tales to my... I've got a Evernote note of audiobooks to read. So they are now in the list.
Well, put them at the top of the list. I guarantee you won't be disappointed.
Yeah. I just finished Underwood and Flinch, and that was fantastic. Thank you, Pokey.
Oh, yeah, right on.
Amusingly, I already had it in my list, and then I'm like, wait a minute, didn't we talk about this? I'm pushing that to the top, and wow. It was the one I grabbed was actually the first two books, and then he went to Patreon for the third book, so I haven't listened to that one yet.
Oh, I didn't even know there was more, so you're ahead of me.
Well, the one currently on Podiobooks goes to like 44 episodes, and it's the first two books.
Oh, okay. Wow. Do any guys listen to CC Hits?
I do not.
I did, and then for some reason, I think I switched devices, and it didn't come across for some reason, and so I haven't listened for like a while.
Oh, man. Then there's another nerd rap artist that I'm attempting to get into at the moment who's just fantastic. It's, oh, shoot, the guy's name's Tickle. But I forget what they named the group. I'll have to look it up. And they did this this one particular song. And I'm a sucker for a clever lyric. And I don't know why no one had thought of this yet, because it was so clever. But the line is, throw your hands in the air like you're just apathetic.
Womp womp.
That's fantastic.
I thought it was good, man. And then that rap is the fastest rap I've ever heard continuously throughout the song. There's not just a fast bit. The whole thing is so fast. The hook is not the, you know, that's not super fast, but anytime he's actually rapping in the song, it's really fast, fastest I've heard.
Is it bad that every time we have the audiobook club, I have to open up a tab with my own cloud to like take notes on things that people recommend like every single time? It's awesome.
No, that's why we do this.
Shouldn't those all be in the show notes?
Yeah, I guess. Damn it, that's work.
Paste link. Paste plain text, and whoever edits a show will go find a link. That's what I did when I just did the show notes yesterday.
Yeah, really. That helps so much when you're editing the show.
Because we talked about some movies, and I remember shoving the movie names in there and then going and finding the links and pasting them in.
Hey, the Emacs user in our group can totally complain about hitting Control-C and Control-V. All right.
And that is who?
Me.
And I want to give proper props to X1101. The first, a month ago, we all pledged to help out in the editing to actually get some of the backlog book club out there and on HPR. 1101 is the first person, I guess, to actually accomplish the mission.
Well, I said I would accept group punishment if I didn't, and so I did.
My thing is, I think we need to like figure out who's doing what, because I'm hesitant to start something because I don't know. Like, I know we need to do Street Candles next, and I don't have the audio for that, and it's not on the server. But oh, I don't think it's on the server.
Just grab anything and. And, you know, when it comes up, it'll be ready to go. That's, you know.
Okay, groovy. Then we'll do
so
it that
we
way.
are releasing in order then.
Oh, yeah, I think we have to.
I agree. And there is a page on the wiki to help figure that out. I was thinking people would just write down who was doing it and then start working on it.
Well, I knew we wanted to do them in order. So, like, I didn't want to do, like, David's interview before we put out Street Candles. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't know if somebody was doing Street Candles. If not, I was going to do that first.
Yeah.
Because I miss more than I thought of. A lot of the ones that are posted are the ones I missed. Not like I can't do a, edit one that I prefer to do that I was there for. I think I downloaded the title is escaping me, but the one about the people, various size families, etc.
Match your rules.
Yeah, that one. I grabbed that one.
Man, I have heard more stuff on polyamory in this past week than I ever would have imagined. And I was familiar with all of it because of that book.
Oh, Pokey, when I do release or get on the schedule, the notes for the KPO that wasn't 2 weeks ago, there's a couple, two or three stories in there you'll be really interested in. They're about human technological and biological modification.
Yeah, that stuff does pique my interest. You're right about that.
Woo! Biohacking.
Transhumanists. Wait a minute.
I don't know if I'm ready to go that far to transhumanism. It's, I don't know, there's still too much government involvement in computers to want to do that just yet. But, a couple of small, non-networked modifications would like.
I forget where I read an article somewhere, and it was like talking about transhumanism versus grinders and like how transhumanism is like very heavily steeped in like the West Coast kind of like valley scene. And it's all these like super privileged people who are into transhumanism. And then grinders are like from the Midwest and they're all like blue collar guys. And they're just like, fuck it, I'm going to cut into myself and throw something in. I was like, I'm much more in the grinder scene. That sounds like more fun.
I had never heard it called grinders.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that term up. But no, there was this one dude, completely colorblind, not red, blue, or red, green colorblind, no colors. He sees gray. And
oh, yeah, the lollipop guy, right?
Oh, you've seen that?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I remember that one.
Well, I think this is recent. I mean, he had like a headset that he had on his head that, every color, he would do the frequency as a vibration that, he could hear through his skull, but he's finally found somebody to implant the computer that he and all that into the back of his skull. So he plugs this boom mic thing in the back of his head and loops around to the front of his forehead.
Oh, okay. This is not the lollipop. Oh, yes. I remember this particular story as well. Sorry. The lollipop guy is a guy who's completely blind and he's got this like lollipop that he puts in his mouth and can taste what a camera sees, and it totally just his brain just kind of reads it as sight and it just totally works. It's not high resolution at all, but it works.
So he can taste how ugly I am?
Well, haven't we all?
Whoa. Stuff just got real. This is totally not like freely available, but has anybody ever read Peter F. Hamilton's books?
No.
Dude is spot on like transhumanism and like the future of that. Like imagine like the stuff that was in Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, but like serious and like actually treated like real things. It's his books are fantastic. He's like one of the people that I just like, anytime that guy writes a book, I'll read it. And his books are like 1200 pages long. They're ridiculous, but I'll read through every single one.
And the other guy, Pokey, now this was biological. It was chlorophyll stuff, and I guess sometimes they do use it for treatment of night blindness, but they had it like a big eyedropper to drop it into his eye. I think it's an extract from, fish that are way, way deep in the ocean. And so they didn't inject it in his eye, but it got in through the tear ducts or something. And then they had this freaky picture. His eyes were actually green. But then they took him out in the dark and he had night vision, where nobody did. I mean, he was like, they tested it by having people out in the forest standing next to trees or something. And he was nearly 100% saying, yeah, there's a guy over there. Whereas, the regular sighted people were like 25%.
That's pretty cool.
Well, that'll be in that episode whenever it comes out. I need to get on it because people are stepping up for HPR, and it's getting farther and farther, and you can get stuff on. So that's always a
good. Yes.
Yeah.
Good problem to have.
Yeah, when I pushed that episode last night, May 5th was the first slot.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have.
Here's a credit card beer opener for you, X1101.
Oh, no, that looked cool.
Isn't that neat? It's a ace of spades, and the spade is cut out, and that's the beer opener. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, it's got to be the credit card ninja that I go with. That thing has a can opener on it, like an old P-38 type can opening action. That'll do it. All right, I have to stop looking at credit card tools. We need to start the show.
When your wallet has more credit card tools than you have money, you're doing it right.
You can say that again. Actually, I don't have any credit card tools, but X1101 brought it up a little earlier, and it's neat.
Well, I have a cousin who's a locksmith. He could probably teach me how to use that lockpick tool.
You know, my guess would be that no, he couldn't, because typically it seems to me when you talk to locksmiths, they know nothing about picking locks.
Yeah, they have specialty tools. They look at a lock and they're like, oh, this is this kind of lock. I have a key that will unlock it. Most of the time they bought the tools to be able to do it.
Speaking of, back to lockpicks for a minute, Taj, do you have any Southward stuff?
No, I've literally been, everything I have is, I have one set that I've had forever, and I got it at the local hackers, excuse me, the local hackerspace had a whole like lock picking thing a while back. And so they brought these little cheap Chinese kits, I guess, or something. They're not even that good. they're actually kind of terrible from what I understand. But like, I can get into most things with that, so I'm not real worried about it. There are some like certain kinds of locks that you need different kinds of picks and rakes. I would love to get some of those specialty ones, but really the set that I have does everything I want it to.
That's cool. I was looking not too long ago at I can't remember what it's called. It's a way of bypassing a padlock that you don't even pick the lock. You just dig into it and release the mechanism right through the keyhole. It was kind of neat.
Yeah, like most lock picking isn't really picking, it's raking, which is like, you need a scalpel to do some surgical precision, and you're going in there with a chisel and a sledgehammer, and you just by dumb luck and repetition get what you need.
Yeah, and that's the thing that, like when I said that locksmiths don't seem to know about lock picking, I have a friend who is a locksmith at my last job, and he did not even know what a 999 key was.
Yikes.
Yeah, Pokey, it's called bolt cutters.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the fun in that?
But then again, when I bought my house here, I wanted all my doors to be keyed alike. So I went out and bought a set of keyed alike doorknobs, and I didn't really know anything about doorknobs. So I asked the guy at Lowe's, you know, the difference between them. And he says, well, these are, I call them thumpers. He said, I call these a two thumper. These are a three thumper, because that's all it's going to take is two thumps from a sledgehammer, and you know they're getting in your house if they want to.
The guy that was teaching the lock picking class we went to, he was like, and apparently he goes to like all kinds of hacker conventions and does lock picking stuff. And he was like, you know, the first thing that people ask me is, what kind of locks do you put on your house, since you know so much about locks? And he's like, I buy the cheapest like quick set that I can get at the store, because I have windows, and anybody who wants in my house is just going to break the window.
Yeah, locks keep honest people honest. It's a truism that is true.
Yeah, I mean, you guys don't know the new house that I'm building. It was broke into about 2 when they were building it.
Jeez, that didn't take long.
Yeah, I think what saved all of my contractor's tools is that I ring the house with an electric fence so the cattle wouldn't get there. Well, the contractors were there, and I think at night they couldn't find the gate handles for the electric fence. And for people who are not farmers, gate handles are, you know, a spring-loaded deal that you put at the end of the electric fence wire, and on the other side you make a loop in the electric fence, and, you know, you sort of stretch that thing from the spring and it, you know, it snaps into that loop. So, you know, by that, I would say, you know, I'd say they couldn't bring their vehicle close enough to haul stuff off. So all they got, they took the took the contractor's propane stoves, and they had like a couple stoves and a big bottle of propane. I don't think they took the big bottle of propane, but they took the stoves, and one had its own bottle of propane and the other was on the big bottle. But the contractor told me, yeah, I hope they go use that in their meth lab, because we hot wired the thing to make it work and it'll blow them all to hell.
Dude, growing up in like the country as a kid, that was my favorite pastime, is when friends came over and they didn't know anything about electric fences. And you'd just be like, no, it's okay. I turned it off. Just go ahead. Just watch hilarity ensue.
You are an evil man, Taj. Because I have been hit by those things. And every time I've been nailed, it's felt exactly like somebody took a 5-pound hammer and hit me in the back of the head.
Oh, yeah. It sucks. It's not pleasant at all.
Have you actually been hit in the back of the head with a 5-pound hammer?
Fortunately, no.
I grabbed an electric fence once. It's just 110. It ain't that bad.
It's one of those things. I've actually been hit working on electricity by 110, and it's similar, but it's different.
I hang out with a lot of guys in law enforcement, and it's kind of like a taser. Like, it sucks to get tased, but that doesn't keep people from doing it to each other just for fun.
And yet, earlier you were talking about being surprised at the number of stupid people you know.
Fair point.